Can you hear that Rocky Mountain water as it thunders coming down to wash you away? You can't hold back the rising tide, and you can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track. You can't stop the chain that's rolling down the track.
Welcome to Southpaws, episode 402, Love is Stored in the Knot, which is often stored in me because I'm a fox. I'm Saverin.
I'm Chiva.
I'm Fuzzwolf, and I dispense the love because I'm a wolf.
Good job.
I don't have a knot. I have no love. I am.
But you could. I mean, Jackass got everything else.
I mean, you can have a knot if you want. Everybody can have a knot.
You can have horses, a knot, dragons, and a flare and barbs.
Oh, God. It's got one of those weird dragon dicks.
It's just got everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Why not? Oh, what a week it's been, y'all. It is, there's been good shit, bad shit. There's political shit, dog marriage, a whole bunch of stuff to talk about this week.
They said that fucking, if we legalized gay marriage, then dog marriage would be next. And,
yeah.
And now it's happened.
Well, especially if they're gay dogs. Just to throw that out of the front, congrats to Ace and Rybark from Barking Points. They got married over the weekend.
Yeah, I guess it's not a problem when gay dogs get married to each other.
Yeah, I mean, dog marriage. All of snouts.online was full of that one image from Undertale about the married dog couple.
Oh,
dogs
can
pet other dogs?
That's cute.
Dog marriage? Oh, man. So that's cute. It's always nice when people, you know, hook up and get hitched. Do it while you still can, kids, right? Also, you know, I survived running The Wake. I mentioned it last week that this was the get-together for my crew after Nightmare Nights ended last year. And we had a pretty good time. People came in on Thursday, got to swan around the hotel. Scope broke OPSEC, so people knew, oh no, they're doing a thing. But, like, we didn't publish anything anywhere, so people were like, oh, are you guys doing anything? Can we come? Oh no, I'm only like an hour away. And we're like, go away. You're not invited, normie. Rando. But Friday, everybody got together at Londoner. Then Saturday, some folks went out to the State Fair. Some folks went out to Madness Comics and Games. We had 21 people go to Fogo to show, which was amazing. I'd never had a chance to really go with my crew.
Yeah, that was a big group because you were like, oh, it'll be 10 people.
And ended up having a few more people than I thought. Like, I didn't account for some other folks. Like, they were still staff, mm-hmm. but they're not in the chat, so they didn't get counted. But Fogo was very accommodating, got us, like, big, huge, long table. We all sat together. I ate a ton of meat, and they made a couple grand off of us, so they didn't complain.
Nice.
I
had not realized how expensive it was, because I was telling Ajax, I was like, yeah, it's like $25, and it's all you can eat. He's like, really? And then you
lunch
were like,
is like 35.
It was, well, you told me like 55, because that was dinner, right?
Yeah, with tip it was like $65.
Yeah, and he's like, okay, yeah, that seems more likely.
But it's an all-you-can-eat meat place. It has a really killer salad bar. Like, if you don't have a tiny stomach, you will get your money's worth really easily. Yeah. I still got my money's worth, and I just paced myself.
I love their salad bar. As much as I love their food, their meat, their salad bar is fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, but I never got a chance to go while the con was running, so this is my chance. Even some of the show staff were like, oh, are you in Dallas? To, like, Scope when he tweeted a picture of us at the table, because you know, Jim Miller got to go when he was a guest, and so it was nice to have, you know, the show staff who, you know, didn't get to come this year because we're not a convention, recognize and be like, oh, have fun, guys. Then Sunday was just more hanging out. We went to Heart 8, mm-hmm. did Pokemon Go Community Day, a chunk of us did, mm-hmm. and then in that evening after the board meeting, we did Londoner, and then Monday we had lunch with Jade and Lexi. So
So have you never been to Fogo or any of those?
I went to Fogo on FWA with Tyrion.
Well, and Fuzz, have you been before?
It's really good.
One, I can't remember if I've been to the one here, but one year at FWA, I did the God Level sponsorship, and they took everybody out to Fogo, all their God Level people.
That Fogo is pretty far away. If it's the same one.
Yeah, that year was actually really cool. It was a long time ago now. I don't know if they still do this or not, but there's a local company that you can hire called the Fur Bus.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, the inside of it is all shag carpet. It's not designed to be a furry thing. It's designed to be a retro 70s kind of thing. So they have, like, you know, lights and music and shit on the inside and stuff like that. And they had so many people God Level that year. Like, they originally had one or two buses. I don't remember. But they had to add another bus because they had a lot of people register on site. I think that was the year that they did, like, the nice laptop bags.
Oh, yeah. Something like those are nice.
Yeah.
Because I think you still use that one.
I have it around, yeah.
Yeah. So that was a lot of fun. It was really good to catch up and see some of my folks that I don't get to see ever because they don't necessarily come to furry cons. Like, I'd seen Jade at Anthrocon, where she didn't know I was coming, so she, like, literally ran across the street and, like, tackle-hugged me. Like, oh my god, I didn't expect you here.
That's cool. Yeah, it'd been a couple years since I'd seen Jade either, and I had not gotten to meet her girlfriend, so it was nice having lunch with them on Monday.
Because they were staying an extra day. Huh? Yeah, because it was, like, saving $200 on the flight.
Yeah.
That was a really nice weekend, and, like, I was a pretty decent host, I hope. Because people were like, well, you're going to do this next year, right?
maybe.
Okay, maybe. Possibly, potentially.
I mean, it was fun and it didn't involve an overly stressful amount of organizing on your end. So.
Yeah, it was just sort of like, hey, we're going to get together and do some shit. And we did. Like, I missed getting to go to the state fair because it helped my family with stuff on that morning. But there was a good number of folks that made it out there and they got to try all the fried food. I mean, these are people that are not necessarily local.
Right,
to go into our state fair.
That's really pretty
cool. To show off the Texas ability to fry everything. Dude,
you did it right. Like, they got to see the state fair, and you took them for fucking Texas barbecue.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome.
Yeah, and it was really nice, too, because there were a couple of attendees who were kind of in the know that were invited that were like, we like you. You're a good attendee. You're welcome to come. So, like, the artist Midnight Premiere, she was the
core photo of her wearing her Banned from Everfree t-shirt.
Yeah.
Whatever came out of that, what was the latest, you know?
They put out a very begrudging, we're sorry, but...
Only because you made us?
Yeah, exactly. Like, they put out their initial statement, everybody called bullshit on it, and so then the next day they put out their, okay, fine, we're sorry, you're sorry you're offended, gosh.
Yeah.
Reply.
Was that even... That was where it ended, wasn't it? We're sorry you were offended, basically?
Pretty much. That was the tone of the reply.
Yeah.
So she came down as a friend of one of our other staffers. And I don't know if you ever met her, but she was this gal who... She attended the convention, and she was always dressed up as Derpy, and she would pass out these little notes. They're, like, from Derpy, and they're a little, like, you're doing great.
I heard adorable. About her. I don't know if I met her, but, yeah, I heard about a person doing that.
You know, she's still doing it, still going to conventions and doing that, and we were always like, you. Like, the last couple of years, we're like, yo, you're a great attendee. We like what you do. You get to come with us to Fogo. She was invited specifically to Fogo as sort of a, you're a good attendee. Here's your thumbs up. And some meat. So
is she local then?
Apparently. Oh, and so she got to come to Fogo and barbecue with us as well. So that was nice. I was really glad that, you know, everybody got along. But we did. But you never know.
I noticed a couple of folks used the hashtag NMND2018.
Yeah. Well, and we did get a couple of replies like, oh my god, they're doing a convention and didn't tell anybody? And it's like, no,
that doesn't work.
That's not
that way.
How this works. And like, at least one of the more odious YouTubers was like, why wasn't I invited? I was just like, who the fuck are you?
Are you one of the people that pissed me off the last two years that are gone?
I hate to say it, but it's like, if you're a pony YouTuber I know of, it's not for a good reason in most cases. Much like, oh, if you're a streamer I've heard of, that's probably not good either.
It's funny, the only streamers I've heard of are like the people I know of because they're furries and I follow them.
Uh-huh.
So Brosentia and Hupfen both stream on Twitch. You stream on Twitch occasionally.
Uh-huh. Hashtag does. Hashtag per.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Lexi does. I auto host her.
I believe Pepper occasionally
streams
as well. And there's a couple other Graveyard Greg streams.
All day, every day. He's dedicated to that. He's got that grind down, though.
I'm not sure if Nietzsche does. I had a feeling that he'd done a couple. But apart from that, it's like, well, a lot of the furries do art streams, but you're talking kind of more
video
games. The video game streamer things. But yeah, the video game streamers I know are all because they're furries and they mention it on their Twitter.
True.
And that's the only reason I know. But like, the big video game streamers, I don't know any of them.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same
YouTube
way.
People. Like, I hear about video game YouTuber when one of them drops the N-bomb. And
yeah, speaking of that, though, like, I made buddies with some rando guy on Fortnite.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, it turns out, oh, he's a streamer, and I dig him up, and he's very, very small, but he's, like, casually being racist and is like, I'm like, God, I don't want to be in your videos if you're gonna do this. And I just like booped.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh God, I end up like playing with somebody who's trying to stream and they're just being casually racist. And I'm like, why? This is like the most laid back, pointless little game, and you're just why? Jeez. I felt so old. Like, uh-huh. I feel old playing Fortnite already, because sometimes you get in groups and they're very obviously like 13 and 14 year olds.
Uh-huh.
And they're, because they're on mic and their balls haven't dropped yet. And because they'd had that one time where, like, how old are you? I'm 35. No way. That's old. You know?
Oh my God.
You can still play video games at that age, old man. occasionally. I try.
What do they think? Like, your finger joints just dry up at the age of 30 and you can no longer play video games?
It really is, you know, the curse. I mean, there are some, like, speed and dexterity things that are a lot harder for me. Like, I see some people build really, really fast.
Oh, 30. That's gamer death.
Gay death and gamer death. Only fighting games you can continue past that age.
Yeah. Because, God, like, I forget, like, how young Sonic Fox is. Because he's only, like, 20. 20. Yeah. And I, like, when I first started hearing about him, I was like, there's this guy, and he's a furry, and he's going all over the place and winning tournaments. And then I found out he was 20, and I was like, holy shit, that dude
just turned to fucking dust.
Super young.
Yeah, he's out in Canada for Canada Cup this weekend, so, you know, hope he does well.
Cool, cool.
Because I follow his ass on Twitter, so it's like, I see where he's gonna be.
Mm-hmm.
He's growing up. He's got himself an apartment with a couple of his other teammates now.
Oh, nice.
Like, oh, cool. I remember doing that. God, I'm old.
And we feel old, I think, because we're in a community that has a lot of younger people in it.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody always feels old. And at the same time, you've got, there's like, you know, 70 and 80 year olds, and they're just like, you're not old, you bastard. I got my photo taken with Colin Baker a couple years ago. He was down here for it was Who Fest DFW, I think the name of the con was, a local Doctor Who con. And we went on Thursday because it was like the quiet day, or Thursday or Friday. There was no line. And he says to me, oh, come up here, young man. And I'm like, oh, God.
It's all relative.
And he's like, I think like 73, 74. So, you know, he's 70 my age. It's like, hello, young man. I'm just like, oh, wow. I haven't felt like a, quote, young man in 20 years.
Yeah. Well, I think that's one of the things that's great about the furry fandom is that because there's no, like, set era that our content comes from. It's constantly being made and remade and all that. There's no like upper or lower age limit on being a furry. I have what I grew up watching and looking and reading, and you know, there's still stuff made every day, so you know, there's no upper or lower bound. So there's always gonna be someone younger than you.
The oldest furry I know that we work with is Fred Patton, and he's 78.
Dang.
And he was around when the fandom started, basically. Yeah. So like, yeah, there's people that consider themselves furries that are in their late 70s at least, and I've heard of older people at cons than that. So yeah, it's a very broad spectrum of ages, which, you know, I think is kind of a neat thing. It gives you a chance to like interact with people from different generations, and maybe hopefully that makes you less of a shit, you know, like the way like older generations have always taught shit about the younger generations, going back to the time of at least Plato and Aristotle, and probably before.
There like, there's is actually literally, quotes
about that.
Yeah, there is literally like a Babylonian clay tablet that is bitching about children not respecting their elders, and it's like 8,000 years old.
Yeah.
Like, the children these days don't respect the gods. Surely these are the end times.
So, like, the boomers' parents... shit on them, especially during the 60s when it was all free love and stuff like that. Oh, these goddamn hippies. Then the boomers shit on the Gen Xers, my generation, because we were the slacker generation and we weren't going to grow up to be anything. And of course, you know, now the whole boomer thing is writing op-eds about how millennials are killing fucking everything, I guess, you know. I really want to see, you know, I really hope that a millennial finds the cure for cancer so that we can write the article that millennials have killed cancer, because that would be a really cool thing. You know, it's time for millennials to set their sights higher than napkins and Applebee's and kill something. Take on a bigger foe.
The rich.
The rich, yeah. Millennials killed capitalism. I'm looking forward to hearing that one day.
One of the two, you know? So yeah, there's one from Aristotle from the 4th century BC. So that's fun.
Back when books started being a thing, like you're talking like the 1400s, you know, like when Gutenberg invented the fucking printing press.
Yep.
And books started taking off and people there are articles complaining about people reading too much because it's ruining the art of conversation. Because, I mean, why do you need oral storytelling anymore when you have books? And so, like, you're talking 500 years ago that people were like, well, this new technology is making people rude. And then you flash forward to the 21st century and it's like, everyone's always got their face in their smartphone. And yeah. You know, fucking 100 years from now, it's going to be like, everyone's eyes are always completely white because they're activating their brain interface and they're looking at a hologram display or...
They're only communicating peer to peer and not accessing the main neural net. How dare they, those exclusionary kids.
Say, like, oh, ever since humans got their brains removed and connected directly to computers, like, it's really ruined the art of conversation.
It's like, I'm beaming pornography to all my friends at 1 million bytes a second.
Yeah.
I've downloaded the entirety of E621 that doesn't hit my blacklist.
I wonder what the upper storage limit of the human mind is.
It's a good question.
Yeah. Because I know, like, Johnny Mnemonic had, like, 20 gigs or
and that was like oh, that. Shit.
I'm way overloaded, man.
His head's gonna blow up.
It's actually a fun movie to watch. I mean, I know people shit on it, but like, have you seen the movie Johnny Mnemonic?
No.
It's based on this. Okay, that's another one we have to add to the list. It's Keanu Reeves. It's a 90s cyberpunk film. I think it's actually really cool. And it is fun to watch as an example of 90s sci-fi. And you'll love it. It totally is one of those doesn't take itself too seriously kind of things. So we'll add that to the list. I'll show you Johnny Mnemonic.
Okay.
On to what you were going to talk about.
I was going to say, I'm proud to announce that I'm no longer a gamer. So Red Dead Redemption 2 has come out, or is coming out here very soon.
Uh-huh.
And EGM has given it a review stating, one of the most gorgeous, seamless, rootinous, tootinous games ever made. And if you voluntarily miss out on it, you're either not a gamer or in a coma. Well, I'm here talking to you. So clearly, I am no longer a gamer.
So is this just free. A series that you're not interested in?
It's a cowboy game set in a fictional Wild West, except it's not. It's like in 1899. So it's right at the tail end of the Wild West being a thing. Early 1900s is like when the main story is set. Mm-hmm. And then its sequel is set in like 1919 or whatever. So it's a cowboy game. It's set in near modern era. And I watched some of the gameplay of it and I just kind of like, doesn't seem like my thing. Like, it's just Wild West stuff. But it's very highly reviewed, of course, because it's a big thing. It's been in production for years and years, you know, but this is also the one that was in the, oh yeah, a couple of us are working 100-hour weeks, that kerfuffle, if you saw that.
Oh yeah, like it was like the CEO of the studio said that,
yeah,
right?
And it was like him and the writing staff would sometimes work 100-hour weeks, and
I'm just like, that sounds like bad project management.
And they backpedaled, and it's like, no, only us, but then people went and talked to a bunch of their current and former staff, and I was like, yeah, if people that worked less than 60 hours a week were marked down in red on like the internal docs, and like some people did 80 during like crunch times, and it's like, yeah, there's 100 isn't too crazy when you compare it to whatever they're making their lower down people do. Being a QA tester for that game, you're probably working crazy hours for fuck pay in the Bay Area. So, you know, good fucking luck.
Ever since we started doing For Our Planet, I have not voluntarily worked overtime, even for extra pay. You know, and mostly because, yeah, I've got another thing that I need to devote time to. And I'm also just kind of like, it's just not worth it, you know? Like, time and a half, like, yeah, it's a few extra bucks depending on your salary. But when I add that up, I'm sort of like, yay, my paycheck was a few bucks more.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, after taxes and shit, it's like, yeah, 20 extra bucks, 40 extra bucks on my paycheck, even 100 extra bucks. I just sort of be like, I don't feel like busting my ass that to that degree for 100 bucks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it is the time that I spend coming home, working on For a Planet, spending time with my family, or just reading a book is so much more valuable to me than the money I get for putting in even 10 extra hours a week.
Yeah. And like for this, it really sucks too, because people are like, oh God, should I just boycott the game? I don't know. And it's kind of a double-edged sword. Like, if you don't want to support Rockstar's shitty business practices, you can. But it also kind of comes down to the game's performance is what predicates their bonuses and whatnot too. So it's like, oh, if people are like, well, I'm not going to buy this game because I don't support Rockstar's thing, then it also affects the people who busted their asses. So it's like, ah, fuck, you know.
Well, do we know that it's the devs and coders that actually get bonuses, or is it just the C-level execs? Because fuck them.
Yeah.
You know?
It really brings up that question, because, I mean, for me, I'm not interested in the game. I never played the original, and the American West is just not something I find super interesting.
Right.
Like, I may watch a couple people stream it and look at it, where they're going around being murder hobo cowboys, but you know, it's just not really my thing. It's an open world cowboy game. If you dig cowboys, great, but it's not my thing.
Not your aesthetic.
Yeah.
Fucking, if it was like a fucking 80s vaporware cyberpunk game, you'd be all over it.
Well, unfortunately, the company that's making the cyberpunk game is also shitty. CD Projekt Red and their various,
oh god, their one about snafus. Like, they co-opted one of the, oh, what was that? It was a trans related.
We will not
hashtag.
Be erased.
Yeah,
or something like that.
Yeah,
that actually kind of trails into the actual first serious topic of the week.
Uh huh.
But like, as a final tie-in to at least the Red Dead thing, somebody gave the game a 3.5 out of 5, so a 7, and the gamers are having a normal one. Remove your review now. Rubbish of analysis. This mediocre magazine only gains visibility when it makes these dirty clicks bait. Deplorable journalists and irrelevant slight clone. Remove your review. Fuck you, remove your review, bitch. Remove your review. So this is the review that's knocking the Metacritic down to a 97? Your career as a reviewer is over. Lost all credibility. You, sir, are a bell end.
So this person gave the game a review of average, basically. Actually above average on a 7 out of 10.
Yes, but there's more.
Oh, Christ.
You gave it a 7 out of 10 because of white privilege in 1899 and because you don't like the way Rockstar uses weight and gameplay mechanics and because Arthur shows up to events as they're unfolding? It's a video game, dude. It would be pretty fucking boring if we had to show up to something and wait 2 hours for an event to unfold. Your review is ridiculous and an insult to the gaming community.
You gave a review and a score and then you backed it up with your reasoning? Fuck you, you hack.
And now the threats of violence.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
We know the guy's name, and with 5 minutes of searching, can even learn what he looks like in an approximate area of where he lives. Sooner or later, he's going to be walking around in some true gamers, and that is the time to punish this loser. This fake gamer who writes clickbait articles to get attention. Let's just go find him and show him some real gamer attention. So you're going to yell slurs at me from 40 yards away? I think that's what's going to happen. a fate worse than death.
Holy shit. I'm so glad that you're not a gamer anymore, you know. With God's help, you have beat this terrible affliction.
I have come out. I am clean. I play video games, but I am not a gamer. Through the grace of something, I don't know. Social awareness and not being a dipshit.
Yeah, right.
So, yes, unfortunately, speaking of other gaming companies that are not doing so hot,
right?
CD Projekt Red and their Cyberpunk 2077, and, like, they've had multiple snafus as of late. They had a GOG tweet which was talking about, like, they posted it on, like, the anniversary of the start of Gamergate or whatever, because in Postal 2 they patched in a tombstone games journalism death date, and it was like the first like fate of like articles, yo, hey gamers need to clean up your shit, and they posted about that and people were like, hey, wow, it's sure great for a game company to commemorate the start of a mega harassment campaign, you guys sure fucking suck. Then there was on the CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk account, they were like, did you just assume our gender to somebody?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Which is like, what the fuck, guys? It's cyberpunk. It's supposed to be like, you can be whatever the fuck you want in a cyberpunk society. And then most recently, they co-opted the We Will Not Be Erased hashtag, which is specifically dealing with the federal government basically trying to legislate trans people out of existence that they kind of non-apologied about there too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, cyberpunk is already super questionable now, and like GOG, the company selling it, is also super sketch at this point because they just keep fucking up. Mm-hmm. They're Polish. They're very far right relative to a lot of the internet in a way.
Uh-huh.
Like they're politically aligned with our far right here as much. So, you know, they're going to be dumbasses about it, and they're proudly dumbass. It's disappointing because I thought the game would be pretty cool, but hey, if it's out on GOG, it's DRM free, so I can just pirate it and spend Mike Pondsmith $20.
Donate so, $20 to a trans person's GoFundMe.
Yeah. So, yeah, the most recent thing with the New York Times having announced this is the government is trying to fuck with trans rights. They're trying to basically say that gender is immutable, sex is immutable. They're retroactively revoking some trans people's passports. This was out months ago. They are making it harder to change your gender marker on your documents. They're trying to say that discrimination against trans people is not actually gender discrimination, mm-hmm. and it should be totally fine and legal.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real fucking bad time for our trans brothers and sisters out there.
Mm-hmm.
And this thread by Parker Malloy I found as a good distillation of the ongoing discussion, because they were updating it. So it's like, I don't know how many different ways I can say that this is bad and we really need help here, but this is bad and we really need help. And the headline is, Trump administration wants to remove gender from UN human rights documents. So, like, the right of being able to, you know, declare your own gender identity is a UN thing. They're like, really take that out. Exclusive. U.S. diplomats have pushed for rewriting of collective statement to remove language inclusive of trans people. The U.S. mission of the United Nations is seeking to eliminate the word gender from UN human rights documents, most often replacing it with woman. Couldn't go, like, 12 hours on the story before anyone at major media outlets seemed to entirely forget about this. NYT seems to have hit its limit of one op-ed about trans people written by the same trans person they publish all the time. WAPO reached out to me asking to write an op-ed, but then the things I sent them, after a handful of ideas, just sort of responded like I was cold-pitching them. The bomb story is important, obviously, but you're not also devoting a pretty significant chunk of time to the rapid-fire rate the Trump admin is gutting trans protections. You're just being irresponsible. I'm reading a thread reader unrolled. I'll include the link in the show notes.
Okay.
Swap in any other group of U.S. citizens into all these headlines. Most are different things they already did, and it's pretty obvious how over the top they're being. And honestly, after seeing all this, you're one of the people who's like, well, obviously I don't personally believe in this specific thing, but vote for him anyway. You're just really crappy. I don't even know what to say anymore. This is a story from a few months ago. People have been brushing it off like, oh, well, it's probably just a few glitches, because the State Department said there hadn't been a change of policy yet. And it links the trans women say the State Department is retroactively revoking their passports.
So fucked up.
I think there's an internal policy change to make it as difficult as possible for trans people. This was an article written July 27th. But then the State Department changed the gender marker website a couple months later, but then changed it back when people noticed. Basically, the State Department eventually said, we want to state equivocally that there has been no change in policy or in the way we educate passports for transgender applicants. And I just kind of like, they're just going to asterisk that shit. I feel it's less likely that all these are just a string of weird coincidences and more, as many actions of the administration have taken would suggest that a few people just accidentally rolled that out too early. One thing that sucks about this issue is that there's that thin line between getting people's attention to discuss the very real dangers being presented here, and people being like, ugh, look at this identity politics obsessed SJW, and completely tuning out. And I really try not to be the person yelling on a street corner that the world is ending, but this stuff needs more attention if there's any my hope of stopping it before it's too late. But very few people with influence care.
This is totally one of those things where, like, first they came for the trans people, and people didn't pay attention because they weren't trans. And it's like, yeah, they're a very small minority, but, like, you have to take care of the most vulnerable in your society.
Yeah,
I mean, otherwise your society don't mean shit.
And it's in, you know, to kind of veer slightly off from that, I mean, it's a fucking tenet of the Bible. This dude, you know, you might have heard of him by the name of fucking Jesus, is like, what you've done for the least of these, you do for me. And pretty sure that in the scale of, like, general privilege and power, trans people are kind of at the bottom fucking basement.
Just a little.
And so, like, you know, they're even betraying their own religion by doing this, but whatever.
But they do that all the time anyway. Exactly. These people don't actually fucking believe anything Jesus said.
No.
I mean, Jesus would be hated if he showed up today.
He'd be like, oh, he's looking pretty brown. I think he's ISIS.
Yep.
Yeah. And
he'd get fucking incinerated with a fire.
He was Middle Eastern. He was Jewish. He was a liberal. Everything that he preached was,
you know, take care of the poor and yeah. Love thy neighbor.
You know, and there's that quote from Stephen Colbert where he lays out, like, Jesus said to do this, this, and this. So people need to either stop claiming that they're Christians or just own up to the fact that they know this isn't what Christ would want and they just don't want to do it.
Yeah. And it's generally the latter. And the thing is, this actually goes into kind of the next section of this article here. What I think the end goal is here. Luckily, I don't have to speculate because that info is already public. The Family Research Council put out a 5-point public policy action plan against trans people. Understanding and responding to the transgender movement. Executive summary. And it goes into that. The FRC plan is, their answer to all these policy questions is no, by the way, is this. So part two, public policy implications of the trans movement. Should the government itself, local, state, and or federal accept and recognize so-called changes in someone's sex or gender identity? Their reply would be no. Should the government force other private entities to accept and recognize so-called sex changes through the use of non-discrimination laws that include gender identity as a protected category? They would say no. 3. Should the government pay for medical treatment designed to create the appearance of one that is other than the sex he or she was born? They would say no. Should the government force other entities to pay for changes in sexual appearance? Should the federal government permit transgender individuals to serve in the military as their preferred sex? No, 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 these people would say. But the head of the organization, Tony Perkins, is constantly on network and cable news for friendly interviews, so like it's no big deal. Both CNN and Fox have had him on multiple times in the past year. Also, check out the similarities between FRC's conclusions in that document with the linked Trump memo. So, where are they getting their marching orders? But from these fucking evangelical fucks. And if point one on their list, even allowing state and local lawmakers to implement protections for trans people, sounds far-fetched, it's already in the works, and might not even require getting a bill through Congress. I wrote about that in a recent thread. But because certain anti-trans voices who pretend to be allies have tried to push the idea that trans people can't write about trans issues in an honest and objective way, the best I can hope for is that someone at one of the news outlets that steer clear of giving trans people more than just a token voice will, from time to time, at least see this thread and be better informed for what they get when they get asked to write about it. The fact that this administration is following this org's how-to guide is permanently marginalizing a single group should be enough for people to care. But if that's not, maybe this is. They won't stop with just trans people. A lot of this, but better organized, was in the op-ed I ended up pitching to the Washington Post. Too bad they declined. The TLDR, Mr. Journalist, you could have saved trans people's civil rights. I gave you all the clues. So the thing is that this shit with the Christian right has been going on for an extremely long time. If you Google wedge documents, these are things like that these groups would put out, like trying to divide groups of people on the left, essentially. You know, there's the people that try to push for, you know, LGB without the T, and then there's plenty of TERF groups that are trying to, you know, further complicate matters for people in the UK and, of course, in the US. And they are funded by the far right. They are, you know, they are not anything remotely feminist. They are just fucking conservatives that want to pretend. And they're using hatred of trans people to further weaken LGBT solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, once you break up these already small groups, you just pick them off one by one.
Oh, yeah. Divide and conquer. That's what they did in apartheid South Africa.
Yeah, and that's what they try to do with, like, dividing support from Black Americans for gay people. Like, trying to, you know, separate that as marginalized group solidarity.
And they did this with basically working class people, basically, like, oh, you're all mad because you're poor and you're being fucked over by your bosses. But hey, you're white. They're black. You should hate them, you know? So they basically sowed seeds of racial tension so that workers wouldn't present a united front against them.
And this has literally been going back to the founding of our country.
Yeah.
Of the United States. Like, this shit, it's well documented. That, you know, splitting the worker class via racial lines or income lines has been a big deal since the beginning to keep them moneyed in power. If you want to listen to more about the white side of things, what was that? Becoming white.
Seeing white.
Seeing white, yeah. We listened to that earlier this year, and it was extremely eye-opening. I would recommend you. It's like Seen on Radio, Seeing White. You can download it. It's about 10 hours, 12 hours of audio in total across 14 episodes.
It is legit fascinating. And, like, I already knew a lot about racism in America, but, like, this is really interesting. It goes back to the founding of the country and basically how the idea of races was created and used to justify enslaving people because they could see them as less than human if they could categorize them in some way. And it's actually really fascinating, and I learned a lot listening to it.
But
it's depressing, but I learned a lot.
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's another podcast called Behind the Bastards, which is pretty fascinating.
I haven't heard that one.
It's about the worst people you'd never want to know about. And they did a two-part episode on, like, Paul Manafort recently, which was,
oh,
wow, that dude was a fuck. And is a fuck. But then they also covered like the East India Company all the horrific evil that they pulled off. I think Winston Churchill has an episode because he was a fascist asshole too.
Yeah,
responsible like, for more deaths than Hitler.
He did a lot, and like he did a lot of good things, but there's like it's like finding out like your uncle who's a hero is a racist bastard.
Or you know, well,
and this is particularly difficult for British people because Winston Churchill is the one, oh well, he got us through the war.
Yeah, you know? And then he caused 20 million Indian folks to starve to death. Yeah.
Yeah,
so that's some complicated-ass history. That's the thing, too. Yeah. Like, you know, when we go growing up, we learn the sanitized, extremely whitewashed versions of history.
Even like Lincoln as well. Like, you know, oh, Lincoln freed the slaves. And that's like, you know, your elevator pitch per president, you know. Like Jonathan Colton said, Washington was first and he was perfect. And Abraham Lincoln freed the slaves. But like Lincoln did some other shit that was far less progressive. And freeing the slaves wasn't really like really high on his list. It was it or other reasons. And it's like, yeah, like.
It was partially to destabilize the South.
Like
to own the South.
Like many historical men in power, he's a complex person, did some good things, did some bad things, but his story is not nearly as sanitized as our school history books would have you believe.
Yeah. And the other thing that also should be pointed out, that with the weakening of sex protections for trans people, mm-hmm. that will also further weaken sex protections for cis women as well.
Mm-hmm.
There was a thread I saw retweeted that was basically this guy, his wife, who dresses fairly masculine, was threatened by like a bathroom security guard at a bar because she was dressed rather mask. And basically he was like, show me your pussy, essentially.
Yeah, like this, like making this bathroom thing an issue is just it's a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. Like trans women going to the women's bathroom is not a problem, was never a problem, and now that they're trying to use this as a big wedge issue, it opens up a whole can of worms because a lot of people don't dress conforming strictly to people's gender expectations. I mean, we've all known tomboys. We've all known women that are like, oh, I hate dresses. I always wear pants or jeans.
Uh-huh.
Right. And it's like, you know, like some women just, there's a stereotype about lesbians always having short hair, but I mean,
flannel. Don't forget the flannel.
But there's plenty of straight women that they just like having their hair short too. You know, so if you see like a short haired person wearing flannel going into the ladies' room and to stop them, you know, and yeah, maybe they don't have double D's. So these people are like, oh, you're not allowed to go in there. Like what the fuck?
I mean, I have long curly hair and boobs, and you know, I dress masculine because that's pants, you know. But I've been misgendered in the past, so like I would be weird if like I wander into the men's room and someone's like, "The fuck you doing here?"
Yeah,
I mean that'd be bizarre. I could just whip my dick out at him and be like, "Sup, bitch."
And someone else pointed this out that it's sort of like. Someone pointed out, I've never seen anyone's genitals in a restroom.
Yeah.
You know?
The only time I've seen a dick at a bathroom is when it's one of those big trough pissers.
Right.
At, like, a ball game. And you, like, turn to, like, not step in the puddle on the ground, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, nobody's going into the bathroom to get a gander at genitalia. But you're going
especially
there to do
for
your
women,
because
they're all in stalls.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way you're seeing if somebody has whatever they have.
Shiva could answer this. I mean, aren't you just whipping your tits out and showing each other off in the bathroom? No, that's not how it works.
No.
Oh.
Oh, darn. Man. porn has so led me astray.
You know, they're not just having random bathroom sex. That's like the most unsexy thing possible, honestly, to me. Like, ugh.
Yep.
Anyways.
It's like, even if, like, the commode and the walls are relatively clean, I'm just kind of like, the floor. Ah, yeah. I don't care what they bleach it with. It's a bathroom floor.
Yeah, but that's really neither here nor there. But it's just basically, you know, with trans people being fucked with, this is also going to extend to women and, like, trying to force women into gender stereotypes.
Right.
You know, like, oh, 'cause you're gender nonconforming in your dress. Well, you know, that would justify bullying you or discriminating on your work because, oh, you don't dress like a woman. You're, you know, what are you? What's wrong?
This is, I don't know if you're in the loop on this or not, but there was a con in Japan fairly recently put in their con rules, basically the no cross-playing, that you couldn't cosplay as an opposite gendered character. And like, people came down on them like a ton of fucking bricks, and I think they backed off on that. Because it's like, I've been to A-Con. So I've been to anime cons, A-Con, and hell, even furry cons, like, there's a lot of cosplaying, and I'm just like, I know enough cute guys who really pull off the short-skirted female anime girls, and I'm just like, seeing somebody trying to go to the bathroom and having some fucking bathroom door guard there. The more cons that have the gender-neutral bathrooms, the better, because then this isn't a fucking problem, regardless. Yeah,
everyone's in there to do their business. It's not just people are there to piss. It's not that exciting. And I think, you know, to kind of wheel it back into the furry side of things, like, respecting someone's gender identity and their pronouns is really no different than me referring to you as Fuzz or you as Shiva. Because that's the name we go by. That's your chosen. That's how you present yourself to the furry community.
Right.
And it's really easy to respect that. So as furries, we should also be very easy to respect people's pronouns and their chosen names.
And even if we go back around to trans and, you know, the bathroom issue, I mean, if that succeeds, when is it going to come back around to, oh, gay men in the bathroom, they might harass me. You know, lesbian women in the bathroom, they might harass me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a next step to, a lot of it is like fear and what they're going to do behind closed doors when you're vulnerable. Well, what's the next step in that?
And they always pull out this think of the children shit too, because especially with the gay and lesbian issue, it goes right back to all gay men are fucking pedophiles and we need to kill them all so they're not in our bathrooms raping our little boys. It's the fucking classic playbook of LGBT bigotry.
And that goes back probably 100 years or more, but, you know, remember Boys Beware?
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, when you're talking about Think of the Children, it was a story, I think you mentioned it last week, but we talked about it at some point together this week, when that school had an active shooter drill.
And they,
oh, God,
and
yeah.
That one trans kid, they were like, well, we don't know which locker room to let you in, so you just get to sit in the hallway, I guess, and get shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, oh, active shooter drill. It's like, well, I get to sit in the hallway. I'm going to catch a bullet, aren't I? You know?
I'm bait.
Like, literally, that's telling that girl, we're going to use you as our meat shield. While we're sacrifice. All hiding in the lockers.
Yeah. So it's incredibly fucked, and it is something that we need to be aware of and offer support to our trans family in this time, because it's real fucked. I have seen things where people, like, there are countries that will offer asylum to trans people from the United States. Canada, Ireland, a number of other countries in the EU. They're just like, oh yeah, you're a persecuted ass minority. So it's actually totally possible for trans people to get asylum and become citizens of other countries because of how our fuck-ass government is treating
them. And, you know, and Trump makes fun of other countries and calls them third world shitholes. And it's like, we are the third world shithole. If other countries are offering asylum to our citizens because of our government.
Yeah.
I mean,
marginalized members of society having to claim asylum. I mean, it's what? It's not like the United States has gone through and destabilized and destroyed other countries before and then had to be like, oh no, there's asylum seekers.
Like the
what
whole,
we did to Honduras.
Even the whole phrase, make America great again, pisses me off because it's like there are massive numbers of Americans for whom America has never been great.
Yeah.
And that they have had to fight and claw and scrabble for every inch of ground to be recognized as, okay, maybe sort of equal, but not really, you know? And I'm like, so I don't believe America is a great country. I believe America can be a great country, but not doing what we're doing now. Like, we're going in the wrong direction. You want to make America a great country, then you stop pushing this bigoted bullshit into laws.
And what really fucking sucks is that the millennials and the generation after that are largely rejecting the policies that are affecting us now. Like, they're rejecting evangelical Christianity. They're rejecting religion in general. Mm-hmm. They're far more left-wing, far more supportive of things like universal healthcare. There was a thing on one of them where it was like 69% of millennials support universal healthcare, and all the replies on Twitter were just nice.
And for multiple reasons.
Yeah. Frankly. And so, like, there is a generational shift, but it's just a matter of getting rid of all the fucking boomers.
Yeah.
Like, it really is.
And that's the thing that, that's why, like, we push voting so much. Because, you know, for a lot of people, it's like, just wait 20 or 30 years for this other generation to die, and then it'll be easy to get rights. And that's not a fucking option.
It's,
you know, you should not have to do that. And you should not put up with anyone that tells you, well,
just wait,
slow down. You know, the gays just got the right to marriage. 20 or 30 years, we'll get around to you. That's bullshit. And the way that we can fix this issue now is millennials voting. And the younger demographic, unfortunately, has a much lower percentage of active voting than the older demographic does. So the way you can really turn this around, if you're a younger person, is by voting. And I've seen articles about Gen Z, which is the generation after millennial, the people that are like 18 and under right now, basically, like who are like about to come of age, basically. And like they tend to be more liberals than millennial, more liberal, more leftist than millennials are even. So if millennials start voting en masse and they push to their children and their younger siblings how important voting is, then when all the Gen Z people hit 18 and they start voting, then you're going to see like real change. But it's really got to start now. It's got to start with this election.
And I really hope that, like, in places like Florida, where, you know, we've had these shootings and whatnot, where they are pushing the kids who are turning 18 to get active in voting and whatnot, I hope that has a big effect on the upcoming election, because the governor race in Florida is between a black dude and a racist. And
how polarizing can you get?
I saw the clip from the debate for the Florida governor's election.
Yeah.
Have you seen that? Where, like,
he's like a hit dog hollers.
Yeah, where, like, the black Democrat that's running for the governorship is he lays out, like, this organization has donated money to you, this organization has endorsed you, you know, these people have spoken in your favor, and they're all racist organizations. And he's saying, so I'm not saying my opponent is a racist, I'm just saying the racists think you are.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a really good way of putting, like, because if he just flat out calls his opponent a racist, then
It's like, oh, that's name calling.
Yeah, it just hominem. Gets, yeah, exactly. It gets pushed off really easily in the ads, and like that would be no end of attack ads. But by saying like, look, dude, all the racists want you to win, so you need to maybe like sit down and think about that, you know, and putting that out there to the people watching the debate who will be voting in that election, that's very important. And I think that guy handled himself very well in that debate. And I'm like, and I didn't even know like the governor's election was going on in Florida because I haven't lived there in a long time.
But. Yeah, it's just a high profile race because of that kind of stuff is going on. Because unsurprisingly, there's been like multiple racist robocalls made against that guy on for the Republican. You know, So it's a nasty, dirty, knockdown, drag out race.
And I really hope our Hispanic lesbian former sheriff,
Lupe Valdez,
wins the governor race in Texas. I don't know if she will or not. If she does, it's gonna be because of Beto.
Yeah,
because like I don't see a lot of campaign material for Lupe Valdez out there, but I see a lot of fucking Beto O'Rourke campaign material out there, and I hear his name all the time.
He's got the support of the Dallas Morning News, the Houston Chronicle.
Which, I read that article. That was a big fucking deal, because the Houston Chronicle endorsed Mitt Romney when he was running against Obama. They endorsed George W. Bush for both of his terms. They endorsed George H.W. Bush back when he was running. This is not a this is not a super liberal newspaper, and the fact that they've come out and said Ted Cruz is bad for Texas has done fuck all, we endorse Beto O'Rourke, this super liberal Democrat from El Paso, that's a big endorsement
to get. I hope it works, because like, you know, I went and voted on Monday. I was there with Ajax pretty early that morning, and
Tieran has also voted.
You can go to vote411.org to find your local polling place. This is a national level thing, by the way.
Cool.
Put that in the show notes. And it was an interesting thing, because there was actually the starting of a line. The library had put down a queue. We went over to the Josie Ranch complex over there, where they have like the old senior center and the library and all that fun stuff, and the nice park and whatnot. And you know, I was the second youngest person in line there, Ajax being the youngest. And like, you could actually see, and I showed you on my Apple Health, that my pulse just fucking skyrocketed the moment I was surrounded by these old fucks. And like, nobody was saying nothing. It was just like, just the anxiety of voting and like knowing that most of these people would throw me to the fucking wolves given the chance. And it's like, it's sad that I have such a dim view of fellow voters, but also I live in Texas. And as a queer dude, I know where the wind goes normally. So, you know, I was there. I made sure I voted. I got all my stuff in. It was actually pretty nice. There was lots of uncontested dim judgeships in the city, which was cool. But it was just like, ah. But I got my vote in first thing. Mm-hmm. I've gotten a couple of, like, text messages on my phone. I was like, have you early voted yet? And I'm like, yes, I've early voted.
Yeah.
Cool, thanks.
Another local furry, Glaragorn, I saw tweeting that he went and early voted, and he was talking about how massive the line was. And
there's
some of the stats that have been posted, like the first day of early voting is way more than any other midterm election, and it was almost as much as the last presidential election in 2016. That says a lot, because people usually don't pay attention to the midterms, even though they're super important, especially on the local level. But everyone pays attention to the presidential election.
Yeah.
So for early voting for a midterm to almost equal the people that came out and voted for the presidential election, that shows, whoa, there's a lot more people engaged this year. And it's going to be really interesting to see the results.
Yeah, I mean, I've put my vote in and that's all I can do. I mean, well, at least from the voting side of things. I mean, that's the thing, and it has changed since the last little bit because the last couple years have been so fucked politically.
Yeah.
People have had to center politics in their life a lot more, and that is tiring and it is stressful, but you need to be aware of what's going on. You can shove your head in the sand, but then don't be surprised when people like react poorly to you not having an opinion on something bullshit that happened. Or, God forbid, you know, you're still like some Trump-supporting dipshit in the year of our Dark Lord 2018, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's a great way to lose friends. And honestly, if I had friends that were Trump supporters, I wouldn't be my friends anymore at this point. Because it really, it sucks. But unfortunately, the line has to be drawn somewhere. There are no good Republicans.
The only way I could see having a friend who voted for Trump would be like if they were like, I realize what a massive grave mistake I made and I'm voting all Democrat this year.
I mean, fuck, even Caitlyn Jenner only just recently said, hey, what the fuck?
I know, right?
And it's like, oh no, I never thought it would happen to me, says woman who voted for Leopards Eating My Face Party.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. Like, I can't, but like, how dumb was she? This caught her by surprise. I mean, I know she's insulated a lot by being a famous rich trans person, but I mean, shit, did she just think everyone was making this shit up?
No, just she thought that money would protect her. When, no, I mean, it will, like, that lot longer than any random poorer person, but if it comes down to it, they'll come for her too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So
money only gets you so far. And if they decide they're going to rescind all trans people's passports, well, I mean, you know, I guess she can hire a really good lawyer, but.
Or hop on a chartered plane and jump the border.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And, you know, she actually would have that option, but fucking everybody else doesn't. So I guess in a way it's good that she actually did speak up and say, what the fuck? But
at this point,
it's almost like too little too late. I mean, the time to like advocate for someone that wasn't going to strip trans people of their rights was in 2016.
Yeah. So this has been a very tiring segment. So but it is important to discuss because it is something that does affect us. It affects plenty of people that I know and care for. And even if I didn't know and care for a bunch of trans people, it's just the right fucking thing to do to give a shit about your fellow people. You know, what's that tweet? It's like, I don't know how to tell you how
you should care about other people. Yeah, that's so fucking true.
It's an evergreen tweet.
it really is. And like, and I'm glad I know quite a few trans people via the furry community because I know more now about their day-to-day struggles and what they have to deal with. And I'm following more to one person that's had gender confirmation surgery recently and how they're dealing with the recovery and the cost of that and everything. And like, I understand a lot more now. And like, I thank our very diverse community for like giving me that insight. Even if I didn't know any trans people, I'm like, I wouldn't want them to suffer, you know? I don't know any Samoan people, but I'm not fucking racist against Samoans. You know? You don't need to personally be friends with every single ethnicity, nationality, and gender to see them as a fellow human being, you know? Yeah. I don't know how to speak Indian, but I know Indians are fucking human beings. Mm-hmm. you know?
I mean,
this seems basic, but it
doesn't seem to be basic.
But it doesn't seem to be basic, right? Yeah.
So, you know, you should care about other
started
people.
On how badly Native Americans are still being fucked over. Mm. So.
That's a topic where I would want like a native person to actually come and speak on because I'm super not qualified to talk about that other than hey
I've read some articles about shit people are going through.
Look up Tanya Song on Twitter. She tweets about it a lot. She's native. She worked on the most recent Fox and Peppers album with them. She did some of the arrangement.
Oh,
but she follows me for some reason, which is cool. But anyways, you should if you. look at her on Twitter and see about what she tweets about. It's a lot about Native stuff and a lot of stuff that the media doesn't talk about because, I mean, Native Americans don't get a lot of coverage in the media because, like, the most recent thing was Elizabeth Warren and her stunt.
I didn't hear about that. Which one?
She's a
senator from Massachusetts.
And she's been claiming Native American ancestry to a degree. And so, like, this has resulted in the right wing being racist towards her, calling her Pocahontas, etc.
Which Trump started, I think.
Yeah. And so she was like, well, fuck you. I'm going to take a DNA test. And turns out she's got a teeny tiny bit of Native American ancestry to her. And so everyone's like, lol, whatever. How dare you? And the Native American tribes are just kind of like facepalming, going, yeah, like, this isn't, like, helping.
There's very mixed emotions about this, because, like, on one hand, she does have Native American ancestry, so fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
But on the other hand, and, you know, and this, like, the criticism that's been levied at her is, like, you can't call yourself Native American because you didn't grow up in a tribe, you didn't grow up in a reservation, you didn't grow up in part of the community. You don't fully understand the struggles in the day-to-day lives of Native Americans that are growing up, like, in that situation. But on the other hand, she actually did say, I never claimed that I had a Native American experience growing up.
Yeah.
She, you know, she had a white woman experience growing up, which in America is not exactly the peak experience anyway.
But still better than most.
But she did not claim to have the Native American experience. Yeah. So, like, I can kind of see both sides with that.
And you notice how just claiming it was enough to get her racial slurs slung at her?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So,
which is stupid because so many Americans have some level of Native American ancestry in their bloodline somewhere.
Yeah. You know, it's...
Do you have any? I forget.
No.
Okay.
I did the 23andMe thing a while ago, and the only sort of indigenous bloodline that is anywhere in my history is some Eastern Siberian from several thousand years ago.
Okay.
And that is it.
I can't remember. I think, like, Ajax did the thing, too, and he had been told in his family that there was a Native American, like, in the not-too-distant past, and it turned out, like... None of that shit.
You know,
and like all of his ancestry was very European, a lot of German stuff.
It's a very common, I think it's kind of like a white guilt thing.
It's a very common lore, family lore, like, I guess.
My parents said that shit to me growing up, and there ain't a fucking drop of North American Aboriginal blood in me.
Right.
And those are fairly well mapped genotypes, so if it would have shown up, it would have shown up.
Right.
And so, like, it is kind of a, like, oh, no, see, we're one of the good ones. We commingled and didn't massacre them. But my family line came to the United States in the 1800s, so whatever, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, it is a common-ass thing. It's like, oh, you know, white mundanity. Well, I'm not actually white. You know, there's some Native in me, therefore, you know, I can totally dress up in a headdress for Halloween. Don't do that.
This whole, like, the joke about white people having no culture, and, like, for the people that complain about that, white people have kind of brought it on themselves by, like, claiming to be Native American, or like, when I say I'm Scottish, and people reply, oh, me too, my great-great-grandfather was from Edinburgh, and I was like, then you're fucking American.
It's like, I was born there.
Right.
You know,
and I'm like, white Americans may feel like they have no culture, but they're constantly grasping to claim the cultures of that make up their bloodline.
Yeah.
So, like, quit bitching about the fact that white culture in America is apparently mayonnaise and really boring potato salad.
And white bread.
And white bread, I guess.
And American cheese slices. And that's not a dig.
And the thing is it's like, yeah, there is white culture, sure. You know? There probably.
Sort of.
I guess I don't really think about it because I legit am Scottish, so I think of fucking caber tossing, haggis, and being angry at the English is my culture.
Oh no. My most of my genetic heritage is English. Oh no. I don't know, man. It's goofy, but you know, when it comes to like native stuff, we're certainly not qualified. I would say again, look up Tanya Song on Twitter. She's a really good voice for that. And we are going to shift topics now back to something positive. Yay. And good trans news.
Okay.
So, in Supergirl, if you guys have been watching that, it's one of the DC shows. It's not Arrowverse, but it occasionally intersects with the Arrowverse. It's right. Generally a far lighter show than, say, Arrow or Flash. They're actually getting their first trans superhero. The actress's name is Nicole Maines, who is transgender, and she also...
I was going to ask you if the actress was actually
that was actually
trans.
Like the thing.
Because that was one of the things I was curious about in Sense 8, because there's a main character who is trans, and I was wondering if the actress was really trans in real life. And I should have known better than to even question that, because it's made by the Wachowski sisters. Mm-hmm. And I should have trusted that they would have fucking cast a trans actress to play the trans character. But I verified it at the time I started watching the show.
It's Hollywood. You never know.
Right. And the actress is actually trans. Which, so yes, I'm very glad that you looked that up, because that was my first question.
Yeah, it's the people.com thing. She basically, Maine's own journey began at a young age. She had a twin brother, Jonas. She's like, growing up with him, I could see him identifying with all of our boy toys and everything, and he would be really comfortable in his skin and his gender, the Maine native recalls. But at the time, I wasn't. I thought it was the most natural thing in the world, so I went with my parents at 3-4 years old and asked them when I would get to be a girl, because I just expected that I would be. She had supportive parents. She began transitioning. I'd been on puberty suppressants and hormone suppressants, so I didn't go through male puberty, she said. And watching Jonas get his voice go deeper, his features become more masculine and defined, it was really surreal. It was like, dodged a bullet, Nicole.
So this is her, like, they were identical twins?
Yeah.
Oh, and so one of them was going through male puberty and she wasn't. And she must have been trippy.
Yeah, so it's a nice little puff piece, but it is really good that, you know, she had supportive parents and everything. And this is, you know, she's 21. This is her first acting gig. And she is a character called Dreamer, who is Kara Danvers' mentee at Catco World Chi Media. So she's basically the superhero sidekick to Supergirl. And that's pretty cool.
That's awesome. That's a pretty big role.
Yeah, because Supergirl, I mean, it's still going after 4 or 5 seasons. So, it's sticking around. So that's really cool. And if she's, you know, a seasonal character or stays around longer, you know, she hopefully won't be, you know, fridged.
Right.
But then again,
it is a female lead show though. So hopefully that's less of an issue.
Yeah. And again, Supergirl is much lighter superhero fare than like Arrow or God help you, The Gifted on Fox.
I haven't watched that one.
It's an X-Men universe series. And to be honest, Ajax and I have been enjoying it. I know it's not to your taste, Abra.
We're 2 episodes away from the season 1 finale. And, you know, bad shit happens a lot. It's super fascist U.S. And very dark.
Sentinel Services, the made bad.
The SS.
The SS, yeah.
Another interesting thing, they seem to got a lot of the actors that were in Burn Notice.
Hmm.
The main SS guy was the sidekick guy for most of the last season.
I never watched Burn Notice, sorry.
The main character's mom was the mom on Burn Notice.
Oh, okay.
So, like, well, Panther and I watched all of Burn Notice together.
Oh, okay.
And so, like, we're like, wait a minute, that dude's familiar. Oh, shit, it's the dude's mom. And then we looked it up, and yeah, they do share a lot of actors, but that's neither here nor there. So we're watching that, and it's okay. We've watched the first 2 episodes of Legion, the first season of that, which is wild.
Oh my god, I am so glad you guys are finally fucking watching Legion.
Yes,
like,
I am stoked about that. It's one I've meant to sit down and watch. It's supposed to be a mind trick.
I didn't know how you would experience it, but I knew that Panther would fucking love it, because
it's a real trip.
Up his alley with the trippy visuals and the music and the set design. It's just, oh, it's so good.
Yeah, he picked that up, the season 1. It was like $10, so of course. He does
season
that a lot.
Season 2 is still good. It does have some missteps. There's a character death that I'm really kind of salty about.
Mm.
But, I mean, I'm not, no spoilers.
Yeah, because I'm watching that.
Yeah. But no, it's a good show. You should totally stick with it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we started watching it like yesterday and watched a couple episodes. It was cool.
Yeah, you should totally check it out.
It's been on my to-do list.
A show that I didn't like that was like a free first episode was The Rookie with Nathan Fillion. Me.
Which is sad because everyone likes Nathan Fillion because he was in Firefly and Archer.
And Castle and a bunch of other stuff.
I loved him in Castle.
And so, like, this was... I didn't know what to expect going into it. It's just a fucking drama. It's a cop drama. But nobody in the show is likable at all. It valorizes the LAPD, which is one of the most high-profile racist ones out there.
Right.
And basically, it focuses on three rookies. Nathan Fillion's character, there's a young Hispanic character, and a young black character. Nathan Fillion's character, he's a 40-year-old rookie who basically decided, I'm going to join the cops after being involved in, like, a bank robbery thing. There's the young go-getter Hispanic gal. And the black kid is the son of, like, a super high-up police, like, officer guy. He's, like, a high-up in the department. Mm-hmm. And he's, you know, he was assigned cop at birth, you know.
Mm-hmm. I was going to tell that story.
Well, you can in a second.
Okay.
So, we watched it, and it's just a straight-up drama. There's no humor to it. Like, the story is extremely jam-packed of bullshit. Like, there's a million different storylines starting off immediately. Like, the Hispanic rookie gets cooked up with a racist guy who, like, there's a particular scene early on where she and he are in the car together, and, like, they stop abruptly in the road, and there's a truck behind him, little dinky truck that has three Hispanic dudes in it that honks at them. So dude hops out of his car and just fucking spouts off towards these Hispanic dudes in a very racist way. Like, you know, if it was up to me, I'd throw them back across the wall with a catapult kind of thing. And then he tells the actress to relay what he said to them in Spanish. And she's like, I'm not going to be a racist piece of shit to these guys. And so she very carefully explains to them, hey, you know, you should really be more careful when you're driving and don't honk at cops when your car's in such poor repair. And then afterwards, the racist cop comes up to her and talks to her in Spanish. She's like, I told you to say what I fucking said in Spanish. And so, like, that really made the dude out to be a shitbag. It was very rare that both Panther and I agree that this show sucks, we're not going to watch it after one episode.
Yeah.
Because he's more tolerant of certain shows than I am. And I'm like, everybody on this show sucks. I'm not watching any more of this. And Panther was like, yeah, this sucked. It was a free episode, so no loss. Right. But it is disappointing that, like, oh, it's Nathan Fillion and he's doing something dramatic, except he's really not that great a dramatic actor based on his, like, pedigree from what he's done. You expect it to be a more, like, a role with some comedy to it. And another weird thing is, like, they show they use pop music in weird spots.
Mm-hmm.
So it's, like, peppy and upbeat music going on these very dire things.
That's weird.
Yeah, it was not a great show. I mean, your mileage may vary, but, you know, there's so many other good shows to watch, right? Yeah. But yes, Fuzz, what's your...
I watched the third episode of Doctor Who already.
Oh, excellent.
And yes. Sarah actually was like, hey, we already have it. And he wasn't into Capaldi at all.
Grr, sorry, Scottish pride!
So you watched up to Doctor Who?
Yep, it was a interesting episode. You know, I take it you've already watched it.
Yeah, I'm caught up.
Okay, I figure as soon as it hits, you're like...
Yep.
Rosa Parks versus the space racist.
Yeah. Space racist.
It's very good. And it tackles the racism of the American 1950s, but also, and this is very relevant now, it also discusses the racism of the 2018 United Kingdom. Because two of the three of the Doctor's companions are people of color this season. And because they're in the 50s, they're not supposed to be at the all-white motel that they've gotten a room at to try to plan, because they don't want to go back to the TARDIS because the evil space alien is, or the evil time traveler is a little too curious about it already. So they get a motel room, and the doctor and then her white male companion are kind of pretending to be a couple that are there, while the other two are at the time hiding in the bathroom, and it turns out they've actually snuck out the window and are hiding down the alley behind a dumpster. And like, they're talking about how, like, you know, shit's really bad here, but like, in 50 years, you know, they have a black president, and like, that's progress. And the black guy's like, yeah, but like, you know, I still get hassled by the cops more than my white mates do, and like, shit's not perfect. And the other woman, Yasmin Khan, I'm not sure if she's Indian or Pakistani.
Judging by some of her comments, she's Pakistani.
People use a racial slur for Pakistani and Indian people at her. When she's coming from the mosque, people yell terrorist at her and stuff. And like, they're both from contemporary Britain, you know, from 2018 Sheffield. Actually, all three of the companions are. And it just kind of shows, like, it makes the show very grounded and relevant to the time that's being aired. And people are assholes are complaining about this, and it's sort of like, you know, the Daleks are an analogy of Nazis. Like, the Daleks' whole thing from their first appearance is they want racial purity. They want to kill anything that's not a Dalek, because the Daleks are the supreme beings. And in the 70s, it did an episode called Genesis of the Daleks, where they go back in time to the Daleks' home planet before Daleks are made, when they're a humanoid race at war with the other humanoid race on the planet. And their regime, their uniforms, it's all very clearly Nazi-inspired. Like, the Daleks are a total commentary on Nazism. So like, Doctor Who has always been doing this. And the, you know, the other complaint is about, oh, you know, going back to like this historical time. And it's like, the original conceit of Doctor Who, like the original way it was pitched to the BBC, was as an educational program for children, that using the storytelling methods of time travel, the Doctor and his companions would travel back in time, visit historical periods, and children would learn about those historical periods. So in the 60s, you have an episode called The Romans, where they go to Rome. There's one called The Aztecs, where one of his companions is mistaken for a goddess, and she wants to stop human sacrifice. And the Doctor says, you can't rewrite history, not one line. And actually makes the difficult choice of having Barbara not stop human sacrifice, because that would change the past. So the show has always done this, let's go back to a historical time period and educate people. This is literally in the show's DNA from the beginning. So, I mean, fuck people that are bitching about this. But I'm really enjoying the show so far. And the only thing that I'm not quite clicking with yet is the TARDIS console room design. I'm not entirely a fan of it, but that's like such a fucking minor thing. Like, if I'm not partial to the design, I just kind of ignore it. Like, it's not a major thing. It's just because I have a certain aesthetic for what I like in a time machine. But, you know, but Jodie Whittaker is 13, her three companions, you know, and I love the diversity, you know?
The entire episode where they kept calling her Mexican and not Pakistani, because she's just a light brown instead of...
because she's in America. And
yeah, they wouldn't necessarily have that point of reference.
You know, and she's like, did he just call me Mexican? Like, what the fuck? And then her and the young black guy are joking about her, like, making Mexican food or something like that later. But, you know, I know I'm a giant SJW cuck for saying this, but I legit love the diversity. You know, just... writing these different characters that are very different from each other. The four of them, they're clearly, this is going to be a slow burning season, is my feel, is that they're spending a lot of time where we're like, they're really developing the relationships between the four leads. And they've also got like a background season long arc building.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have really good feelings for how this season is going to unfold. So on to the other story I was going to tell earlier was, knowing so many trans people, I'm familiar with the acronyms for assigned male at birth and assigned female at birth, AMAB and AFAB. And I'd started seeing ACAB used online, and I had not seen that before. Ed Saverin used it referring to this police procedural, and I immediately thought, assigned cop at birth? Like, I just slid cop into the rest mm-hmm. of the acronym. And I was like, that can't be right. And I had to Google it. And it turns out it's an old punk term for all cops are bastards, which I had never heard before. That was a gap in my knowledge. But then Sarah and I were talking the other day. I was like, you know, you could be assigned cop at birth. Like, if your father and your grandfather was in the NYPD and you're fully expected to also join the NYPD.
It's kind of like military families where you're expected to follow in that tradition.
And firefighters very much the same way. So I was like, assigned cop at birth, that's a new thing. But now I know what ACAB stands for, so...
The more you know.
The more I know. Yay!
So have you been watching anything, Shiva?
Mostly a lot of YouTube. Yeah. I haven't sat down. We watched Doctor Who this week, but other than that, I watch a lot of fucking YouTube, to be honest.
Hey, that works.
And mostly a lot of the seasons. Like, I watch the Try Guys. I watch a bunch of... We've been binging this Irish People Try X. And sometimes it's food from around the world. Usually it's food from around the world or drinks from around the world. People send the stuff. And some of the girls, but there's a couple of guys on there where it's just like, just keep talking. I love your accent. just keep talking. And some of them are real characters. And when they get really excited, they go almost indecipherably Irish.
Maximum Irish. Like,
I cannot understand the words that just came out of your mouth. You know, there was, I made out like three words out of that sentence, and I'm relatively good with accents. But yeah, then they go deep Irish. I watch Binging with Babish. I watch, there's a French guy called Bruno Abouz, who's another big YouTube chef. And he's done a lot of stuff where it's like, I can do that. I know those techniques. That's not actually too hard. I think I want to try that one. Watch a lot of fail videos, and Sarah's been watching a lot of like Vine streams where it's just a whole bunch of stuff strung together. Just silly shit. Other than that, I've been watching, it's mostly work, home, WoW, bed. And now my schedule shifted this week, so I could actually get home a little bit before you guys come over or other nights, right? Like raid nights. It's really nice to get home and have like an hour and a half breather before my next, I don't know, appointment, for lack of a better term. So I get home, rush, 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 and that's all I do that evening. So it's been, today's Thursday, 4 days of it. I've missed the schedule. However, my body sleep scheduled like the other one much better. The rest of my life did not. So, kind of feeling a little short on sleep, but it's better in general.
Well, that's good. I mean, you're back to a relatively normal schedule since you got that other vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
So, we do have a email, an ask from our Tumblr.
Oh,
okay. Southpawscast.tumblr.com. You can also email us, southpawscast@gmail.com. So this one is Anon. Hi, I've wondered if you have any opinion on cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Monero. Do you think they can be used as tools to help people be more independent and safe from a hostile government? Or do you regard them to be more some kind of libertarian voodoo? I'm kind of interested to know where the Southpaws stand on this.
I really don't know much about it, so not the best person to ask about it. I have a rough idea of what it is and what it does, and I honestly think it's going to be something fly-by-night that will eventually get kind of legislated into the ground.
It does seem to be a lot of hucksters making a lot of money off a lot of people. It's kind of a pyramid scheme, really. Like, and its most tangible effect on me is driving the fuck up computer part costs.
Right, yeah.
Because, you know.
Siam's been trying to buy a video card for a reasonable price for a couple of months now. And oh my God.
Yeah, that's not happening anytime soon, unfortunately.
Weirdly, even older video cards are worth money now. So I'm currently cleaning out our electronics closet at home, where I'm like, hey, we've had these 10 VGA monitor cables for 15 years, holding on to them all because one day they might be useful. And it's sort of like, you know what? I'm going to keep two of them.
You could make a VGA of Nine Tails.
You know what's funny is that one of them is a fucking VGA extension cable.
Nice.
So Ajax was looking at it and he goes, this wouldn't even hook up. What's it for? And I was like, it's an extension. But anyway, I found one of Tyrann's old video cards in box with the accessories. And I looked it up on Amazon, and third-party sellers are selling it for $100.
God.
And this is a 2007 video card.
Basically, if it can do the math, people are snapping up whatever they can get.
Yeah, it's like the dumbest two shit. Gigs of RAM or something like that.
I mean, that's really good for back then.
Yeah. Like, well, I mean, Tyrann's a gamer, so when he buys a video card, he tends to buy a high-end video card. But
yeah,
that was back when, like, video cards were not ridiculous prices. But for an 11-year-old video card to be selling for $100 is fucking nuts. My opinion on Bitcoin is sort of like, well, like the original intention of it is not what it's being used for anymore. Like the original intention of it was that it would be used as a form of currency to buy things online. And then investors got into it and skyrocketed the price of a single Bitcoin to thousands of dollars. And it's like now it's not really being used for its original purpose. It's being used as a form of investment. And it peaked at like 17 grand. I think it was earlier this year or last year. And a lot of people bought into it thinking it would keep going up. And it's the last I checked, it was around 6 grand.
Yeah, it's so, like one Bitcoin is $6,391.
Right. So it's dropped from a high of $17,000. So if you bought Bitcoins like years ago when they first rolled out, you still made a lot of money compared, you know, at $6,300. But the people that bought it when it was between like $10,000 and $17,000 have lost a ton of money.
I mean, hell, if back in 2010 you could buy a Bitcoin for a nickel.
Right, yeah.
Like, that's one of those things where it's like, yeah, sure, I kind of wish I'd bought in, you know, bought $50 worth of Bitcoin back when it was a nickel, waited till it got to like 15, 16K and said, see ya, fuckers.
Yeah, like a friend of mine had 10 Bitcoins at one point, and he had sold them back when he got like $200 for them, and it was basically sort of a, oh, I tried this, I'm not really into it, I'm just going to sell it off, and he got like $100 or $200. And he tweeted when it hit its high that if he'd held on to it, he would have made something like $240,000 or something.
That's insane.
So it's like, yeah, I wish I'd known back in 2010. I would have bought a bunch and sat on it. And then when it was getting to a decent amount, I would have sold. But so basically my opinion is that it's pretty worthless. I mean, it's going to keep going down. It might go up again, but it'll burst again. It's
an extremely volatile form of investment, for sure.
It's a volatile form of investment. It's not useful as a currency. And I've been asked twice now if I'm going to enable Bitcoin on Bad Dog Books. And the answer is no. Because, like, if you buy a book from me at X amount and then Bitcoin drops by another grand, then I've just sold that book for less. And then it comes like royalty payment time, and like I'm losing money on an ebook, which should be impossible.
Plus, you know, the conversion of getting a Bitcoin into real cash is, you know, there's fees on that too. So you just, it wouldn't be any good.
Like for a merchant, I'm still going to pay processing fees when I go to convert it to dollars and put it in my bank account for, you know, business expenses. So no, I'm not looking integrating Bitcoin into any of my sites or anything like that. And I don't really see it as a valid form of currency. It's not a currency I would accept.
I mean, between the limited number of Bitcoins in circulation, the volatility of it, and the fact there's been so many ICO scams, initial coin offer scams that like a bunch of venture capitals come in, throw in money, and then like, whoops, the money's all gone. The guy's gone to the Caymans.
And there's also, there's all these downsides to it now. Like you have, like I heard there's a massive area in China that they've turned into basically a mining site for Bitcoin, just setting up hundreds of servers. And there's apparently there's land up in the Pacific Northwest that people bought a couple acres on, and they set and they just set up a Bitcoin mine there. And now like land in the middle of nowhere is going up in price because speculators are setting up Bitcoin mines. And you know, and at the same time, like, yeah, it's more expensive to build a computer now solely because of this.
Like, I don't even understand what Bitcoin mining exactly is.
I'll explain off air.
Okay.
And,
but it also is utilizing a shitload of power. I think I read somewhere that it costs more money in energy to make Bitcoins now than what the Bitcoins are actually worth.
Yeah. And like, you know, if all there was things like if all Bitcoin production stopped tomorrow, like if they just shut down everything, it would like lower the global grid load by like 5%.
That's a lot.
Because it's like literally using more electricity to boil the earth to make fake money that has no value. Like it's neat in theory, but in actual practice, it's just contributing to our inevitable demise.
Yeah. And I'm not really worried about, oh, the government's going to take all your money. That does seem like some fucking libertarian woo-woo bullshit.
You know,
it's not like some government on earth can't eventually seize your Bitcoins or, you know, and Congress had started looking into legislating how they're used, because if you bought a Bitcoin for $10 and now it's worth $6,000.
That's capital gains.
That's capital gains. Yeah. You owe taxes on that.
Yeah. So that's the other big obstacle is like these people that have made, quote, all this money on Bitcoin and then lost all this money. Like, what's their tax situation like, you know? There was I saw one article where like a guy claims that in the Bitcoin crash, he lost like 93% of his personal value. And I'm like, well, fuck. I mean, that's the thing. Like, the stock market can fuck you. I mean, the stock market can fuck you up good, too.
Yeah.
But it's slightly less dire. Like, the bubble's coming. Like, there's going to be a market crash in the next term, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But
it's a bit less volatile than Bitcoin has shown itself to be.
So, not to be, like, mean or anything, but it's, like, neat in theory, bad in practice.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, it had promise, like, if it had been used in the way that it was originally sort of proposed, or at least what I had read and understand it to be used for, as just an alternate form of currency, you know, like having money in a PayPal account or something, then okay, sure, it would just be another form of currency and that's fine. But, you know, once investors got in and basically fucked it up for everybody, the whole thing feels pointless now. So, do we have another topic or should we wrap
up? No, we should wrap it up. We're like an hour 40 raw. So thank you guys for listening. You can always find us at southpawscast@gmail.com, at tumblr.com. You can find us on Patreon, southpawscast. You can donate to our Patreon and we'd really like it if you would, because that's always nice.
You could also talk to us on Twitter at southpawscast.
You can join our Telegram group and our Discord group. There'll be links in the show notes this week. You can find me on Twitter, sort of, at Savern Drake. I don't use it that often. I post pictures of Pokemon and cute dogs and stuff and not a lot else. I'm trying to kind of like steer clear of Twitter because it just makes me angry a lot of times.
Mm.
But I go to Mastodon where I can be, you know, it's chill and horny. It's still... Okay, so here's the big deal between Mastodon and Twitter. Mastodon allows you to engage with the tweets or toots on your own terms.
Right.
Like, people, like, there are rules in Snouse.online that, like, all right, you need to put behind the content warning, U.S. Paul, porn, like, anything that you think, like, use your fucking brain. Like, if it could be upsetting, put it behind a content warning, and it allows people to click on the thing if they want to, or scroll on by if they don't. Right. And you can filter out by content warning, too. Oh. So, like, you can filter out U.S. Paul tagged things, and it won't appear.
It just doesn't exist.
It just says filtered post. And that way you can better curate your experience on Mastodon. But like Twitter is just like, it's in the mix. It's like, cute dog. Holy shit, people are racist. The world is ending. Furry porn.
Right.
And so, you know, Mastodon is better. So you can find me at Savern at Snouse.online.
I have a Twitter account at Fuzzwolf. Also, At For Planet and at Bad Dog Books are my company accounts. I'm also on I'm on Mastodon. You can find me at Fuzzwolf at Mastodon.social. I don't really toot there very often, and I'm sort of trying to, I would like to wean myself down on Twitter a little bit, less so because of the content and more so because I spend way too much time on it. Like, way too much of my time gets sucked up catching up on Twitter. And I mean, it's, some of it's good, you know, some of it is seeing what friends are up to or seeing interesting articles and things like that. But like, one of the new things with iOS 12 is that you can turn on this thing that keeps track of your screen time. Like, how much were you looking at your phone today? And it breaks it down by app type. So you can see, you know, whether the majority of your time was spent on social media or it was spent on productivity apps or something like that. So social media apps like Facebook and Twitter and Mastodon, you know, are invariably the majority of my phone time. And just looking at that is kind of like, yeah, I'd really like to focus more on productive things like being mentally at work when I'm at work, things like that. So I might start trying to just trim down my activity a bit on Twitter. I also have such a massive fuck ton of terms muted, partially for sanity, but like, on Sunday, I'll mute Doctor Who because the new episode of Doctor Who drops on iTunes at like 3 in the morning, early Monday morning.
You don't want spoiled.
Right. I'm not going to see it for a day. I don't want spoiled. And thankfully, all the official accounts use the official Doctor Who hashtag. So it's really easy to just mute that hashtag and I'm not going to be spoiled. Because like the official BBC Doctor Who Twitter account will tweet like the trailer for next week's episode. So like, I don't want to get spoiled on that before I watch this week's episode, you know, especially if it's going to be like a multi-part thing.
Yeah.
So it's just easier to do that. But I'm rambling now. That's where you can find me online if you want to say something to me. I am sponsored by FurPlanet.com, so feel free to go to FurPlanet.com and BadDogBooks.com and buy books. It is the last week of October, which means it's the last week of Furry Book Month. Lots of publishers and independent authors in the fandom are running specials this month, so look up hashtag Furry Book Month or go to the at Fur Writers Guild Twitter account where they frequently retweet all the special offers that are going on. I've got sales and special deals on both my sites now. So, and I've got those as a site-wide notice when you go to them so you can see what the coupon code is and everything. So
I'm amused that you are now sponsored by Fur Planet.
I am. Yeah. That's my existence. I'm sponsored by FurPlanet.com.
that's funny. Not that you are sponsoring it, but you are sponsored by.
That's right.
You'll find me on either Twitter or on Telegram as Chimera, K-H-Y-M-A-E-R-A. I am not sponsored. in any way by Fur Planet. I'm kind of boring online.
Another thing I was going to throw out there is, speaking of sponsoring, if you guys are familiar with Boozy Badger and his website, which is lawyersandliquor.com, once a month, he blogs there frequently about various legal issues in his amusing and profanity-laden style. But once a month, he does Furry Friday. And starting with this month's post, which I believe will be dropping tomorrow, Furry Friday is sponsored by Fur Planet.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. That's so cool. So, yay. Yeah, we're sponsoring his furry blog posts now. So hopefully that'll get our name out there a little bit and also helping a member of our community. So
that's cool.
Yay.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for this week. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time. On that note, good night.
And big books.